Hi, everybody, and welcome to, believe it or not, season two of Then and Now, the podcast. I'm your host, John Shomo. It's amazing that we've been doing this for a year already, and I'm excited to get to season two. This will be episode one of season two. We will go over the facts for the week, a little bit of a shortened list because we've done it before, for the days February 28th through March the 4th. And we'll take on three topics, current event topics in the news. We could have picked 300, but I picked three. And then we'll have three good questions at the end, as we usually do. So thanks for sticking around with us for a whole year, and let's make the new year a good one. Okay. First of all, we'll do February 28th, the last day of February this year. On that date in 1953 at Cambridge in Great Britain, Cambridge University, Doctors Watson and Crick discovered DNA, the DNA spiral. Well, that's a pretty big thing. On February 28, 1940, the first ever college basketball telecast appeared on television sets, which were rare, in the New York area. It was a doubleheader from Madison Square Garden featuring the first game, Pitt versus Fordham, and the second game was Georgetown versus NYU. On February 28, 1960, at Squaw Valley, California, the United States hockey team defeated Czechoslovakia 9-4 to win the gold medal in men's hockey. That was our first of two men's gold medals in hockey that the United States has won. The second one, of course, was the Miracle on Ice team in 1980, also in the United States, at Lake Placid. On February 28, 1986, Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was assassinated, shot to death as he left a movie theater in Stockholm. A couple of things about that. First of all, shooting deaths are very, very rare in Sweden. Guns are strictly monitored and very, very hard to obtain and keep. The second thing is Olof Palme had an Ohio connection. He had actually attended college at Kenyon in central Ohio at one point in time. So that story, that sad story, had a local angle as well. Birthdays on February 28th. My coaching hero, the late, great Dean Smith of the University of North Carolina. Dean Smith, born February 28th, 1931. I admired so much about the man, not just his coaching styles, but the way he went about things in his life. He is quite a role model for me personally. Mario Andretti, Indianapolis 500 winner, I think in 1969. Mario Andretti is 85 on February 28th. Singer Jason Aldean is 48. And now Lakers forward Luka Doncic will be 26 years old on February 28th. Just coming into the prime of his career, one might say, at that age. All right, moving to March. March 1st is the anniversary of Ohio statehood. Ohio became a state on March 1st, 1803, the 17th state admitted to the Union. A couple of birthdays from March 1st. Roger Daltrey, lead singer of The Who, will be 81. Ron Howard, great Hollywood producer, kid actor on The Andy Griffith Show, Happy Days, etc. He's got quite a resume as a director, by the way. Ron Howard will be 71, and Justin Bieber will be 31. On March 2nd, the anniversary of the game in Hershey, Pennsylvania in 1962, when Wilt Chamberlain, then playing for Philadelphia, scored 100 points in a game against the New York Knicks. Wilt was playing for the then Philadelphia Warriors. He did it, folks. It's not a myth. He scored 100 points in a game. Birthdays for March 2nd, Dr. Seuss, born March 2nd, 1904. John Bon Jovi will be 63. Chris Martin from Coldplay will be 48. March 3rd, Summit County founded, Summit County, Ohio, in 1840. Santonio Holmes, former Ohio State wide receiver, will be 41. Fellow former Ohio State wide receiver Michael Thomas, national champion, will be 31. And world champion from the Boston Celtics, Jason Tatum, will be 28. March 4th, we'll finish up with March 4th this week. We're kind of shortening it down to match the days corresponding to when the podcast goes out here. March 4th was the original date in the Constitution for the inauguration of a new president every 4 years. It was on March 4th. I don't think Washington's first one was March 4th. I think they didn't get around to it until April of 1789. After that, it was March 4th every 4 years, including March 4th, 1933, Franklin Roosevelt's first inaugural, where he made his great speech, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." Then, by constitutional amendment, that date was changed, starting in 1937, to January 20th, and that is where it stands today. The late Mary Wilson of the Supremes was born on March 4th, 1944 as well. All right, that will do it for an abbreviated version of Facts for the Week. We'll get back to doing a full week of them next week. I just wanted to kind of match the podcast release schedule to the dates a little bit better here. So that's why we did only 4 or 5 days this week. All right, we have three topics. I've culled this down to three topics. I could have done a dozen probably from this week. Things are crazy right now. Topic number one, Elon Musk, the head of the imaginary department Doge, which was not legally set up by the Congress, by the way, posted to all federal employees late last week, that they needed to email him naming 5 things that they did last week at work. That would be a million or so emails. Okay, I don't know who was going to read those. He said, if we don't get a response from you, by the way, that means you will lose your job. They seem to take, as we talked about last week, great glee in firing people. Many heads of departments, even some Trump-appointed heads of departments, urge their employees not to do this, not to, you know, take part in this crazy scheme. So I don't know how many they actually got. It just, you know, happened over the weekend, and I haven't seen a tally or anything. It's really a giant lawsuit waiting to happen, kind of like a lot of the Doge schemes that are going on right now. They're just going to make the lawyers all rich like they weren't before. And I wondered, well, you know, if I were still working and working in the government, what would I have done myself? Knowing the smart aleck in me, I could have said smart something else. I may have answered this way. Number one, woke up, got out of bed. Number two, dragged a comb across my head. Number three, found my way downstairs and had a cup, and looking up, I noticed I was late. Number four, found my coat and grabbed my hat. And number five, made the bus in seconds flat. Apology to the guys who wrote those words originally in 1967. I think you know who they are. Anyway, that would be me. I might have done something like that. And I don't know where this is going to wind up. It's probably a big nothing burger. But if they actually attempt to fire anybody for not doing it or doing it sarcastically like I would have maybe, there'll be endless lawsuits about that. And again, the lawyers will all get rich. It's a ridiculous ask of people. All right, number two. This is a little troubling to me. We're a totally different topic. Sports betting and the fallout that may result in some places. The story that I'm referring to this week broke over the weekend, broken by the Fresno Bee newspaper and CBS. Two Fresno State men's basketball players were held out of their game versus Air Force last Saturday for a, quote, eligibility matter, unquote, which may be tied to an investigation into alleged gambling activity. According to Sports Illustrated, the bets were reportedly prop bets, betting the under on total points for the team and total rebounds for the team. And these two players allegedly bet that Fresno State would not score as many points and have as many rebounds as the lines were, if you will, for that game. This is not only a thing in college sports. It's not the only college sports-related case since the U.S. Supreme Court legalized sports betting back in 2021, I believe it was. Let's face it, the starters at Fresno State, while on scholarship, they aren't making millions in NIL money like starters at a few select schools might be making. Certainly some people in football are making that much money. Not if you're a starter at Fresno State. Are you getting probably a little bit of NIL money? Sure. But they're not wallowing in it, if you will. And I would personally like to see prop bets on college sports made illegal. I just think it's too tempting. Now, you shouldn't submit to temptation, I guess, on this sort of thing. But I think it's too tempting for a lot of these young people, men and women who are playing college sports, to maybe see the value financially in hedging a little bit on these bets, so to speak, and making sure that, you know, they particularly or the team doesn't reach certain numbers and betting that way and winning and so forth. I just think that we're going to hear a little bit more about that as time goes on, not just at Fresno State, but in other places. There are already three other college basketball teams, and I don't have their names in front of me, that are being investigated for like problems. I'm not surprised. I think it is a big problem. And again, my instant thinking solution here, and I didn't think it through very much, would be to just eliminate the idea of prop bets for non-professional sports. I think that would help a lot. But anyway, we'll see where that story goes. That's a bit troubling there. Item number three, I wanted to give a tip of the hat to somebody who passed away over the weekend. Clint Hill died. He was 94 years old. He's probably the most famous Secret Service agent of all time and never wanted to be that. And he would have much rather stayed relatively anonymous, I'm sure. He was honored for his bravery, and rightly so. If you recall, those of you who remember, Clint Hill was Jacqueline Kennedy's Secret Service agent when she was in the White House. And he was riding on the follow-up car in Dallas in the motorcade on the left bumper of the follow-up car when the shots rang out in Dealey Plaza. He jumped down, ran ahead. Remember, the cars were moving 10 or 11 miles an hour at the time of the shooting. So he jumps down off the running board, runs ahead, and gets to the car just as the fatal shot hits President Kennedy in the head. He had to really grab. He almost was killed. He had to really grab and hold on for dear life because at that moment, the car really started to accelerate after that fatal shot. And he pulled himself into the car, covered up Mrs. Kennedy and the president in the back seat all the way to Parkland Hospital. He had a lot of problems in the years following that. He was Mrs. Kennedy's Secret Service agent moving forward for about a year or so. Then he retired, had a lot of problems, struggled mightily for years, developed a real bad drinking problem at one point. Over what happened in Dallas, what he saw, any of us would be immensely affected in a bad way seeing what he saw. And he's always been a really important figure, I think, to me. He was honored by President Johnson for his bravery. He received the highest honor a Secret Service agent could receive. It was very hollow for him. He appreciated it, but he's written books about it. He's talked a lot about it on television shows since. And he passed away over the weekend at the age of 94. So I wanted to make sure that he gets a mention here. I think one of the most, one of the bravest and most worthy of being honored Secret Service agents of all time, certainly. On a related note, Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna from Florida, of course it was Florida, messaged a few days ago that she wants the House of Representatives to reopen an investigation into the assassination of President Kennedy, and that she would be subpoenaing members of the Warren Commission and doctors who attended to the president at Parkland Hospital. It did make me laugh. It's not a laughable event, obviously, but the fact that we have a member of Congress that's stupid enough to think that any members of the Warren Commission are still alive. Here's a hint, they're not, and that the doctors who attended to him in Parkland Hospital, the president, are still around. Only one still is. Of all the people who were in that trauma room on November 22nd, 1963, only one is still alive. And she was going to subpoena all these people. Well, she can't subpoena Clint Hill now, if we know that. That transcends insanity. And to think that we have members of Congress who actually think that way is really troubling. I just can't imagine having the audacity and the just not unknowledge, if you will. I don't know if that's a word. Lacking the knowledge to know that that was a crazy ask. Okay, enough about her. I want to remind y'all that moving on to a much brighter note, it's bracket contest time. It's rapidly approaching. The tournament is rapidly approaching. It'll be only a couple of weeks or so until we're heading towards Selection Sunday for both the men's and women's tournaments. Selection Sunday will be Sunday, March 16th for both tournaments, by the way. You can sign up for our men's and women's contests at ESPN.com. You can sign up now. Go to fantasy/men's or women's tournament, or both if you want to play both. I certainly do. /groups/then-and-now men's hoops, then and now women's hoops. I have two groups, one for each. You go there, sign up. The password to get into our group is 3 good questions, not like the email address, 3 the number, not THREE, the number 3 good questions, all small case, no spaces. 3 good questions. That's the password to get into our bracket groups. What I found out yesterday, I got an email from ESPN.com. Hey, thanks for setting up brackets, blah, 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 blah. And then it gets to the end and it says, well, we are going to have a contest where one bracket creator will receive a $10,000 grand prize. And I thought, oh, okay. So I've created 2 brackets. What would happen if I would win the $10,000 grand prize? Well, you know, would I keep some of it? Sure. But I would probably take a grand of that or so and distribute it somehow to our top 3 winners in each group. So, you know, on the off chance that I actually get lucky and win the $10,000 grand prize, you could be eligible to win some money, theoretically, if you're in the top 3 of either our men's tournament bracket or our women's tournament bracket. So once again, go to ESPN.com, fantasy, men's tournament challenge, or women's tournament challenge, or both. Go to groups, and then go to the group entitled Then and Now Men's Hoops, the men's tournament, Then and Now Women's Hoops for the women's tournament. And get ready to make your selections once March 16th rolls around, and then we'll see how it plays out and have some fun with it. Looking forward to that. We did that last year. Nikki Kammerer Yates, the Hall of Famer, was our winner. And we did the men's tournament only, by the way. We're going to do them both this year. Last year was such a great year for women's college basketball that I think it deserves equal treatment, obviously. So we're going to do both this year. Okay. On to our 3 good questions segment. We'll have a couple that we'll answer next week that I'll throw out to the audience. Remember, you can get in touch with us. The email address 3-T-H-R-E-E good questions at gmail.com. And some of you have, and that's great. I get 3 or 4 emails each week on that address. First question is from Jeff Cole. Only 2 cities have won titles in all 4 of the major North American sports, and that is Major League Baseball, the National Football League, the NBA, and the NHL. Only 2 cities have won titles in all 4 of those major sports leagues since 2000. In other words, this century, if you will. Okay? Only 2 cities have won titles in all 4 of those major sports. Which 2 cities are they? Again, we'll answer that next week on the podcast. Send your answers in to 3goodquestions@gmail.com. Question number 2, also from Jeff. This is more cerebral, I guess, if you will. According to ChatGPT, 3 things are considered possibly the greatest 3 inventions of all time. What would you say they are, and what would you say is the greatest? We'll let you know next week what ChatGPT says about that. In your view, which 3 things are considered possibly the greatest inventions of all time? That's an interesting little deal to rattle around in your head. I have done that myself. I didn't get the 3 right, but we'll see how that goes. Take a shot at that one, if you will. Okay, I've got a 3rd question this week. It is from listener Pat Riley. Hi, Pat. And I'll read from his email that he sent with the question, and then we'll get to it here. He says, "Hi, Mr. Shomo. I have a question that relates to your commentary about President Trump and Elon Musk's penchant for firing people." Well, yeah. When is the last time, if ever, that the federal workforce actually shrunk? Pat goes on to say, "It seems like the size of the federal government has continuously grown over the past, 249 years or so. Maybe in a post-war peace period? Has there ever been an administration this hell-bent on firing so many people?" The answer to that is no. "I wonder if there's any historic comparison or if, like so many things these days, this is unprecedented." And he added a P.S. Congratulations on 1 year. Thanks very much for listening, Pat. I appreciate that a lot. Now, here's what I found out. Looks like the federal workforce has not grown much, actually, since 1980, believe it or not, in the last 45 years. The federal workforce was 2.2 million people in 1980. It's 2.4 million as of today, not counting anybody who's getting culled by the Trump administration right now. The federal workforce actually shrunk quite a bit during the Clinton presidency. Those of us old enough to remember, remember the fact that Clinton and Gore tried to make government smoother and smarter and more in tune with the technology of the time in the 1990s. They called it their Reinventing Government initiative. They eliminated over 100 programs, around a quarter of a million federal jobs. The people were given buyouts and treated humanely, by the way, unlike some people today. And they consolidated over 800 federal agencies. Buyouts and retirements, as I said, were used, not firing people willy-nilly. So again, the biggest time the federal government shrank, if you will, was that Reinventing Government initiative, which President Clinton kind of sourced out to Vice President Gore, and he did a really good job with that. Now, the other thing I found, and it shouldn't have been a surprise, but I looked at a chart, and the size of the federal government workforce spiked every 10 years. 1960, 1970, 1980, 1990, et cetera. That obviously would be because the federal government hires lots of people temporarily for those years to work on the census. The Constitution requires us to take a census account of the number of people in the United States, in each state, where they live, et cetera, every 10 years. So they hire a lot of people in those years that end in zero to do the census. So the size of the government spikes every 10 years and then goes back down once the census is completed. Okay, those are our three good questions for this week. Two from Jeff there, the one about the titles in the four major sports and the greatest inventions of all time. And then Pat's great question, appreciate that very much, Pat, about the size of the federal government. Certainly a timely topic as we speak here. Okay, I think that'll do it for episode one of season two of Then and Now. As always, I appreciate everyone who listens. Thanks very much for tuning in. You can get us on Spotify. We'll be back next week with episode two of season two of Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo. As always, thanks a lot. Take care, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.